ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಸಯೋ ಗೋಪಿ ಜನವಲ್ಲಭ ಗಿರಿವರಧಾರಿ ಯಶೋದಾನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಶೋದಾನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಮುನ ತೀರ ಮನಜಾರಿ ಜಯೋ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಹರೆ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೆ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೆ 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 ರಾಮೋ ಹರೆ ರಾಮೋ 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 ಹರೆ 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 ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೆ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೆ 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 ರಾಮೋ ಹರೆ ರಾಮೋ 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 ಹರೆ 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 ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೆ 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 ರಾಮೋ ಹರೆ ರಾಮೋ ರಾಮ ರಾಮೋ ಹರೆ 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 ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೆ 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 ರಾಮೋ ಹರೆ ರಾಮೋ ರಾಮ ರಾಮೋ ಹರೆ ಹರೆ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ 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 ಜಯ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಹರಿಬೋಲ್ 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 ಗೌರ ಹರಿಬೋಲ್ ಜೈ ನಿಥಾಯ ಗೌರ ಪ್ರೇಮಾನಂದೇ ಜಯ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪ್ರೀತಿಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಷಟ್ ಶ್ರೀಮತಿ ಡಿವೈನ್ ಗ್ರೇ ಶಿಲೈಸಿ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಕಿ ಜಯ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪ್ರೀತಿಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಷಟ್ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಸಿದ್ಧಾಂತ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಶ್ರೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಕಿ ನಾಮಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಶ್ರೀಹರಿದಾಸ್ ಠಾಕುರ್ ಕಿ ಪ್ರೇಮ ಸೆ ಕಹೋ ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದ ಕಿ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ರಾಧಾ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಗೋಪ ಗೋಪಿನಾಥ್ ಶ್ಯಾಮ್ ಕುಂಡ ರಾಧಾ ಕುಂಡ ಗಿರಿರಾಜ ಗೋವರ್ಧನ್ ಕಿ రజభూమి శ్రీ వృందావన్ ధామికి, మాయాపూర్ నవద్వీప్ ధామికి, పురుషోత్తమ క్షేత్ర జగన్నాథ్పురి ధామికి, గంగమయ్య జమునమయ్యకి, భక్తిదేవి శ్రీమతి తులసీ మహారాణికి, శ్రీల ప్రభుపాదకి నిథాయ ఘోర్ ప్రేమానందే. ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్ల్డ్ డివోటీస్, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్ల్డ్ డివోటీస్, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్ల్డ్ డివోటీస్, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్, ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శ్రీ గురు అండ్ శ్రీ గౌరంగ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ, ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ, ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ, నారాయణం నమస్కృత్యం నరం చైవ నరోత్తమం. ఓం అజ్ఞానతిమిరంధస్య జ్ఞానాంజనశలాకయా చక్షురున్మిలితం యేన తస్మై శ్రీగురువే నమః. శ్రీచైతన్యమనోభీష్టం స్థాపితం యేన భూతలే స్వయం రూపత్తదామయ్యం దదాతి స్వపదాంతికం. వందేహం శ్రీగరు శ్రీయుతాపదకమలం, శ్రీగరుం వైష్ణవాంశ్చ శ్రీరూపం సాగ్రజాతం సహగణరఘునాథాన్వితం తం సజీవం సాద్వైతం సావదూతం పరిజనసహితం కృష్ణచైతన్యదేవం. శ్రీరాధాకృష్ణపాదాం సహగణలలితాం శ్రీవిశాఖాన్వితాంశ్చ. నమా ఓం విష్ణుపాదాయ కృష్ణప్రేష్ఠాయ భూతలే శ్రీమతే భక్తివేదాంత స్వామీనితి నామినే. నమస్తే సరస్వతీ దేవే గౌరవాణీ ప్రచారిణే, నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాదీ పాశ్చాత్య దేశతారిణే. పంచతత్వాత్మకం కృష్ణం భక్తరూపస్వరూపకం, భక్తావతారం భక్తాఖ్యం నమామి భక్తశక్తిగం. వాంఛాకల్పతరూభ్యశ్చ కృపాసింధుభ్య ఏవ చ పతితానాం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః. జై శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసది గౌరభక్తవృంద. హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే. హరే కృష్ణ. At the onset, I would like to beg for the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas so that I can speak something which is purifying for myself and inspiring for all the devotees. So today we will read from Srimad Bhagavad Gita. So I'll read the verse, so you all can repeat after me. It is chapter 5, text 22. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, text 22. Yehi samsparshaja bhoga dukkhayo naya evate adyantavanta kaunteya నతేషు రమతే బుధా. యే హి సంస్పర్శజా భోగా దుఃఖయో నయ ఏవతే ఆద్యంతవంత కౌంతేయ నతేషు రమతే బుధా. యే హి సంస్పర్శజా భోగా దుఃఖయో నయ ఏవతే ఆద్యంతవంత కౌంతేయ నతేషు రమతే బుధా. వర్డ్ బై వర్డ్ సినోనిమ్స్. యే, తోస్, హీ, సర్టన్లీ, సంస్పర్శజా, బై కాంటాక్ట్ విత్ ద మటీరియల్ సెన్సెస్, భోగా, ఎంజాయ్మెంట్స్, దుఃఖ, డిస్ట్రెస్, యోనయ, సోర్సెస్ ఆఫ్, ఏవ, సర్టన్లీ, they are, Adi, beginning, Antah, end, Vantah, subject to, Kaunteya, O son of Kunti, Na, never, Teshu, in those, Ramate, takes delight, Buddha, the intelligent person. Translation: an intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery, which are due to contact with the material senses. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise man does not delight in them. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Material sense pleasures are due to the contact of the material senses, which are all temporary because the body itself is temporary. A liberated soul is not interested in anything which is temporary. Knowing well the joys of transcendental pleasures, how can a liberated soul agree to enjoy false pleasure? In the Padma Puran it is said, Ramate yoginannante satyanande chidatmani iti rama padanashu param bhavani bhidhiyate. The mystics derive unlimited transcendental pleasures from the absolute truth, and therefore the supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, is also known as Ram. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.1 it is said, Nayam deho deha bhajam riloke kashtanukama narhati vidbhujam ye tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam shuddhye dhyasmad brahmya saukhyam dvanantam. My dear sons, there is no reason to labor very hard for sense pleasure while in this human form of life. Such pleasures are available to stool eaters, hogs. Rather, you should undergo penances in this life by which your existence will be purified, and as a result, you will be able to enjoy unlimited transcendental bliss. Therefore, those who are true yogis or learned transcendentalists are not attracted by sense pleasures, which are the cause of continuous material existence. The more one is addicted to material pleasures, the more he is entrapped by material miseries. Hare Krishna. So we welcome everyone to this Sunday feast festival. So today we are discussing from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, text number 22. So over the period of next 45 minutes to an hour or so, we'll try to touch upon how we are not this body, but who we are. We are the spirit soul which lies within the body, and basing this as the foundation of our discussion today, we will try to discuss something on that. So February 14th was just a few days back, and we all know what occasion it was, and it was celebrated by some as Valentine's Day. So there is an interesting joke which comes to my mind in regard to this. One time there was a young boy who wanted to express his love for his beloved. So he wanted to do something really different on this particular day. So he decided that I'll not give roses. Everyone hands out, you know, roses on this particular day. But he wanted to do something unique, kuch hatke. So he decided, okay, what do I do? So he asked a few people, gathered opinions, and then he finally decided that I'll go to the flower market early in the morning and buy something that is unique and the best flower available, but not a rose. I would give something different. So he goes early in the morning to the flower market, and to his surprise, the thing that he was searching for was not available. And doing this over and over again, half an hour passed, 45 minutes passed, but he was not gathering and catching hold of the flower which he actually needed, because there was roses and roses all around. The market was flooded with nothing except roses in different colors. Finally, he latched on to the flower that he wanted to, and then he was very happy that he could, put a hand to it. He purchased it, went to his beloved and then offered that flower to his beloved and wished her all happiness. And then what did he get in return? You know, his beloved just gave him one tight slap. So, the purport is, she gave the purport to him. She said, you gave me BJP, I gave you Congress. So, basically she gave a lotus to him. So, jokes apart, His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj speaks about Valentine's Day and explains in great detail about what this occasion was supposed to be. And of course, we all know what it has landed up to be. So Maharaj, in his talks, was explaining that it was not one personality. It was actually Saint Valentine. This festival came to be known after Saint Valentine. And there were two personalities by that particular name. So the history of one particular personality is that he was a priest in a Catholic Roman church. And he was also like maybe a renunciate, practicing celibacy. And his life was devoted to preaching the glories of the names of the Lord. So in that time, preaching the names of Lord was against the rules of the land. So what happened was he had to literally run for life. But enduring great hardships and pain, he was still going on with propagating the message of the Lord. And Maharaj says further that to such an extent that he was imprisoned, tortured and brutally killed. The fate of the other personality who also shares the common name of Saint Valentine is something similar. He was also a bishop in another Christian church and his fate also ended up something like this. The interesting thing to note here is the day on both of them were tortured and killed happened to be February the 14th. Further, Maharaj elaborates in this particular thing that this was February 14th, but something else also starts on February 14th. Maharaj says, we experience the change of season. So in the West and also in India, we see that the Basant Ritu starts and flowers start blooming everywhere. And in this particular season, the season is very much conducive for partners to engage in conjugal love. So just as he was giving the example of two birds chirping and pecking their beaks at each other, and just by this activity, some wise men in some corner had the idea of expressing their love in a very passionate way. In a more, you know, today's world has everything to do with, I want to be passionate about myself, I want to express myself. Whatever I do, I want to be very vocal about it. So then, Sa Kalena Mahata Yogo Nashta Parantapa, it is said. So from saintliness, the Saint Valentine Day, the saintliness all disappeared and we are left with what we have now. So the understanding is, those who are Vaishnavas, Sadhakas, for us, we need to imbibe the principles of sacrifice, of spreading the holy names of the Lord, purity, cleanliness that we learn from the saints who spread despite enduring hardships and giving up their lives, as opposed to the people of the world who actually follow in the footsteps of the birds pecking at each other's beaks. So the choice is ours. What do we choose to follow? So every festival or every occasion has two things. What are those? First one, the form of the festival. And the second one, the substance of the festival. What is form of the festival? So 14th February also happened to be Shivaratri. And Lord Ganesh is the son of Lord Shiva. So if we take Ganesh Chaturthi as an example for us, if we analyze what is the form of Ganesh Chaturthi in this festival, to just give us a clear picture and an idea. So what do we do? What does come into our mind as soon as Ganesh Chaturthi happens? So we need a deity, we need an idol to worship. So the first thing is the externals. The form is, deals with all the externals. So the first thing is we have to go and get Lord Ganesha. People who get Ganesha to their house, devotees get the idol of Lord Ganesha. That is one form of the Lord. The other form is there are many varieties available in the market. Different colors, different shapes, different sizes. One trunk will be to the right, maybe one trunk is to the left. So people can choose what form of the deity they like. That's also another form. Once you bring the Lord to your house, you bring Ganesha to your house, what do? You decorate your house. That's also part of the form of the festival. You offer aarti, you offer bhoga, you call your neighbors, you invite friends, you have kirtan, you have satsang, you celebrate this festival. So all these things are an intricate form of the festival. They all come under the externals of the subject, which is entitled to be called, and these are all bracketed under something called as form. And then further we see that when we take him for visarjan, I mean there is kirtan, there is procession, there is dancing. So all these aspects also are included broadly under the topic of form of the festival. Now what is substance? Substance is something which is the real thing. The substance of the festival is something which may bring about, I mean that aspect which may bring about transformation in ourselves. So in our school textbooks, if you all have studied history at some point of time or the other, it's interesting to note and remember, if you take a chapter, I mean, what comes commonly to my mind is a chapter of Shivaji Maharaj. What is mentioned in our school textbooks? We have, prominently what I can recall right now is, we might have the, just as we have in Bhagavatam, the chronology of the kings and who's who of the entire dynasty, we also have something known as, on this particular date, Shivaji was born. On this particular date, he fought this battle, the battle of, he conquered this fort on this particular date, and on this date he died. So, history is merely a book of facts that we see, and for, if we ask a question to ourselves, that as students, when children study in schools and they have this subject of history, and they are asked to write their papers, question papers are formed. There might be a student who might actually imbibe the mood of Shivaji, for example. But there might, I mean, he might not be able to recall the dates which was taught in the book. And there might be another student who might exactly recall whatever was written in the books. But it will be very difficult for him and he would never be able to imbibe the values or the principles with which Shivaji lived. So if an exam is taken, as tests are taken in school, and questions are asked, definitely who would get full marks? Definitely the student who has actually learnt everything from the book as it is and presented and kind of just replicated everything in the book. So all this comes under, this is the sad state of our history in our school books. So basically this all things are covered under a thing known as form, as opposed to something like a subject, which is living by the ideals, living by the principles, living by what is more important for us to improve in our life. So this teaches us that history is something derived from the word itihas. Itihas means iti. Iti means thus. And hasa means it happened. So thus it happened. So from this we can learn that itihas is something that is a record of some events which have transpired or occurred in today's date or yesteryears. So they are more or less known as facts and figures. As opposed to the Vedic literatures which actually mention not only about the facts and figures, they not only mention about, like Srimad Bhagavatam for example, it mentions about when Krishna is born, when Krishna left this world. It also mentions about the activities of Lord Krishna. And it also mentions about the philosophy behind all of it. So the why aspect, which is the most important for us to understand, is given in Vedic literatures like Ramayana, Mahabharata and Srimad Bhagavatam, which is very important for us to study and know. So therefore we derive and we conclude from this that it is not the facts and figures that are more important, but the scriptures which create an impact. More than fact, impact is more important for us to achieve something in life. We also have circumstances in our life. In today's life, circumstances have grown to such an extent that actually the substance within our heart which is present, even we've somehow managed to derive ways and means through which we can basically express it in a rather different way and, you know, downgrade it. For example, if tomorrow somebody has a birthday, you know, what's the first thing we do? Just take out your phone, open the WhatsApp, blow some candles and emojis, some figures, send some few cakes across and just type happy birthday to you. So it kind of signifies neither do you have the time to personally call him and wish him, neither he has the time to actually meet you. So modern day events and technology is good, but then when it has, as we say, with the heads we get the tail also. So we have to endure the ill effects of modern day technology through which we have so many facilities, but we have to pay dearly for what we have chosen. Even in Diwali we find nowadays the traditional ghee lamps are replaced with something known as the electric lamps. So what are these for? People are after the exact beautification of the form in their life. They want everything to be carved perfectly, everything to be having a perfect shape and form. So we are more after externals in today's world rather than going after what we need to go after, that is the substance in it. So I would like to narrate a story now. It is a story of a musk deer. So a musk deer is also called as Kasturi Mriga. It is commonly available and freely found in the, of course now it's like nearing extinction. Previously it used to roam around freely in the mountains of Himalayas. I remember seeing one or two in Rishikesh some 10-15 years back. And right now I heard last that in Nepal they are still found abundantly. So we offer the substance that the musk deer, the glands of the musk deer secrete something, and then underside from the glands, the musk deer has something growing which turns out to be the most fragrant substance in the entire creation. And for our lordships, you see Shri Janardhan out there, the Shaligram Shila. So every day in his worship, we offer a little bit of that musk. You need to see to believe it, how fragrant it is. These substances are not available freely. Whatever we get in the market is completely, you know, we might get musk perfumes and attars, but that's nothing. The real thing is something completely out of the world. You apply something, you know, we take just little substance of it and rub the head of the Lord and massage him every morning. And then to sometimes my amazement, the fragrance remains in my hand till late in the evening, even after maybe washing my hands a couple of times after having meals. So such is the purity of that musk. So this musk deer is completely enamored when it gets this fragrance from within, and it becomes completely paranoid as to where is the source of this particular fragrance coming from. And it starts running helter-skelter. It goes to the north, south, east, west, but doesn't find the fragrance or the source. And because it's just lying underneath its navel inside, the entire concentration is at one particular place. So it becomes an overwhelming feeling. And for animals, as you know, which is the most important sense? The sense of smell. We humans have five sense objects. Five senses, the touch, smell, taste, sight, and sound, yeah. So, but for the animals, we cannot match the animals in this particular sense of smell, yeah. So the musk deer, even though that sense was so powerful, it cannot be able to find out where the source is originating from. So ultimately, it goes here and there, meanders, runs helter-skelter, tires out, and then finally it dies. And then someone along comes the way, picks up this fragrant substance from its navel, which it leaves, and then it's up for sale, It's a very potent and pure thing to be used. So, what do we learn from this particular subject? In today's discussion, we would like to say that our life is something like the musk deer. We humans, we living entities, represent the musk deer. I mean, the musk deer represents us. And then the fragrance is something of that bliss or happiness that we are hankering for, that we are searching for. Exactly something like the musk deer does. We also go about in this world looking for pleasure in objects and things where it doesn't exist. So over the next half an hour or so, we'll base on discussion on this particular subject. So we realize that we look in life for something which is very rare to find, and this happiness is very difficult. Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita especially explains that actually real happiness doesn't exist in this world. We need to transcend ourselves to achieve happiness. But all our life, throughout our life, we seek for something which is really illusory, which is really temporary. And the astonishing fact is that we seek for something permanent in a place which is as temporary as the material world. We ourselves are temporary. We ourselves are living in a place that is temporary. But we want something that is really permanent. We never want this happiness to diminish from our lives. And the more we try for it, the more miserable we become. Sometimes we see that it's almost in the cups of our hands, such that we feel, here I've got it. But then as soon as we feel something like that, it just seems like all water has drained out from the parts of our fingers, and we seem to lose everything as if nothing existed, as if there was no happiness at all. Happiness is actually, it's a fundamental search for all living entities. And the ant, the human being, the lion, the pigeon, everything searches for happiness. The rich, the poor, the downtrodden, the uplifted, the haves, the haves not. Everybody is after this search for happiness in this material world. But the thing is, it never exists. So how do we actually achieve true happiness? What is true happiness? And what do we need to do to achieve true happiness is what all this verse talks about. There is a story of a particular daughter of a king who was very enamored with a beautiful necklace that she was wearing. And one fine day, as she was walking in the garden, and then she removed the necklace and kept it aside. So that crow exactly comes at that time, picks up the necklace and flies away. And to her utter dismay, the crow just leaves. She had so many security and so many guards and so many hi-fi systems. But the crow just flew away with her necklace. And this news went to the king. The king was really angry. And he just announced a reward immediately. To whoever finds this necklace will get so and so. And a young man hearing this, his eyes livened up. And then he said, oh, now I know how to make easy money. So then he decided that he'll go after this necklace. And as time would have, as destiny would have, he reaches a place. He reaches a pond or something where there is a pot, and in that pot there is water. And to his amazement, when he sees, he says, yes, I finally found it. So, as he puts his hand inside that pot of water to lift the necklace, he tries to grab it. But then when he grabs, nothing comes. As soon as he tries to lift his hand from the water, all the droplets of water strain away from his fingers. And to his utter dismay, there are ripples of water in the pot. But then he waits for some time for the water to settle. And then again he sees that that same description as it was described by the king and the news was let out with the reward, it was again being reflected inside the pot. So this happened for 3-4 times. And then this man was completely tired. But then to his astonishment, a saintly person was sitting nearby who was chuckling away at this particular instance. And this man could no longer tolerate this saintly person, you know, laughing or chuckling and dryly smiling. So he goes to that saintly person and saying, hey, I'm trying to do something really important here. What's funny about it? Why are you laughing? So that saintly person said, I am seeing what you are not able to. You see something above your head? There was a tree and there was a branch. So the crow had actually left that necklace on one of the branches of the tree. And that reflection was actually reflected in that pot inside the water, which this person mistook to be the real stuff. So our position is something similar to this story. We are always searching for something, but it is which is deep within, but we are searching for something elsewhere. And the end result is frustration, misery, depression, stress, and so on. Like, for example, you have a pizza in your hand and you're standing in front of a mirror. And you say, you just want complete satisfaction just by looking at the mirror. You see the reflection of yourself with a pizza in your hand. And you see, my hunger is going to be satiated or satisfied. No, sir. It won't happen like that. Until and unless you pick up the bits and pieces of the piece in the pizza and actually have a bite and digest it, you won't get energy. You won't get nourishment and you won't feel satisfied. The hunger won't be vanquished. So real pleasure is going after the real stuff. So we look for pleasure, which is something temporary, but we need to go something which is really permanent. So necklace represents something which is true happiness, and our position is something like the man who's going after the reflection of the necklace. We hanker for things and see for happiness in the things of this world. We hanker for happiness in the phenomena of this world. We hanker for happiness in the relationships of this world. We hanker for happiness in the people of the world. But actually all these things nullify to nothing at the end of the day. At the end of the day, life and experience will make one and all realize that these are not the things where we should seek happiness in. It's like Bhakti Rasamrit Maharaj was kind of comparing this whole incident to a funny instance where a man who lost something at a particular place, but then he went and started searching for this particular thing just opposite where there was a lamppost. So Maharaj mentions that a person came after a certain time and asked, "Hey, why are you searching? What are you searching for? What are you looking around for here?" So he said, "I lost something." So he was asked, "Where did you lose it?" So he said, "I lost it there." So then the immediate question was, then why is your search situated here? If you lost something there, why are you searching it here? So he said, "Because there is a lamppost here and there is light here. So I'm happy to look around. I can see things here. So I wanted to search it where the light is there. But where I lost it, there is darkness." So our situation is something compared to this particular man. Or another example would be, a beautiful cake is made for the Lord and it is offered, and then after it is offered, it is brought out, and then all the devotees are waiting for that cake, and as soon as it's of course Mahaprasad, but a person who's fortunate enough will whisk the cake away, and then he cannot tolerate it any longer. He cuts the cake from one side, takes a piece of it in a plate, and then goes in a secluded place and tries to enjoy it. To his utter dismay, he finds that he takes a first bite and his expression becomes completely, something other than what you call a smiling face. So, why is it? Because the active ingredient of sugar wasn't present in the cake. But then, his endeavor doesn't stop. He leaves that piece there. He goes back, sees the cake for a certain time, thinks that maybe I can cut it from the other side. There might be something wrong on that particular side. I'll cut it from this side and then try to experience what I'm looking for. But it will never happen. Why? Because the active ingredient of sweetness is missing in that. Similarly, we come back to it again and again, that as a living entity, we are looking for something permanent in a very temporary place. So all these examples are to reiterate the point that our search for happiness must be based on something which is more worthwhile. Lord Buddha, he based his philosophy of moksha on this particular thing of detaching oneself from sense objects or sense enjoyment. So Srila Prabhupada also kind of has compared this particular theme of Buddha in this particular shloka. So as the last line goes, Nateshu Ramate Buddha. What is Buddha? An intelligent man. He doesn't delight or seek pleasures in the temporary objects of this particular world. So, we will see some of the reasons as to why this happens. Why don't we find happiness in this world? So, when we try to jot down particular points, some of the points that came to mind, I'll try to just share with all of you all. So human nature is something which is very fickle and fleeting. So that's the first point. Why can't we enjoy material happiness in this world? Because its nature itself is frivolous. So that's why it's something called as fleeting. We just cannot capture it for a long period of time. And it's fickle. What does fickle signify? Fickle signifies anything which has a start and an end. So that is something which we call as fickle. So the happiness and human nature is something which is very fickle. So it's very difficult for us to enjoy it. And the aspect of start and an end can be illustrated by a simple example of you have a bite of a beautiful gulab jamun. So what's the feeling that we get when we all bite into a gulab jamun for the first time? What do we feel? We feel divine pleasure, isn't it? We have half a bite of gulab jamun, nectarine, and then we have more. So we have more happiness, and then we have one more, and then our happiness multiplies, and then we have the third one, and then it increases some more, and then when the fourth and the fifth and the sixth and the seventh comes, the scales slowly go downward, and then the levels actually go negative by the time we may reach the 10th or the 11th or the 12th. We feel completely disgusted. So, again, because there is a start and an end to everything, it's very difficult to find that pleasure, that happiness that we are seeking in this world. Okay, now we have, there is a start and an end. Someone might say, people, I am seeking happiness in something which is really not too difficult to achieve. So it's like something like a person wants to have a tea in a 5-star hotel. So how long can he sustain? An average middle class man or even an upper class man can say, okay, after a certain period of time, the pocket becomes a little light and you say, okay, now I cannot enjoy the tea in a 5-star hotel. There is a price that we need to pay for that happiness that we garner. Someone might say, I am born with a golden spoon in my mouth. I am born with a silver spoon in my mouth. Resources are plenty for me. There is never scarcity of resources. I have no problem. The whole life I can buy tea in a 5-star hotel. What do you tell to such a person? For such a person, the answer is, why can he not be happy? Because such a person, such people who accumulate a lot of wealth and are actually having everything on this planet Earth, they attract something known as envy of other people. They attract something known as jealousy. The end product is they attract negative vibes of people who are unable to garner such resources. It's like you don't call for it. It actually comes to you. So you don't need to do something to attract. The minute you are fortunate with certain resources, naturally you'll have people who will be feeling something against you. Without anything you need to do. And His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj, so therefore he was mentioning in one of his talks that what is true love? True love is something which is not found in things, in people. He was telling in an analogy in an example itself, that in his 65 years of life he's not seen somebody achieve love in the things of the people, in the things of the world, in the people of the world, in the objects of the world, or the relationships. People don't respect you for your designations, for your skills, for your posts, for your achievements. Yes, we may get some respect temporarily in this world because of what we have achieved and our skills, our connections to certain people, our hierarchy or our designations in our office. We may attract certain amount of influence and friendship. That may so-called make us feel like we are happy, but actually it is just because of certain things that we possess, people are attracted towards us. So Maharaj was making this point that actually true happiness and real love is something that we can get only and when we actually stop this process of unlimited accumulation of unwanted things and we start experiencing the joy of giving. When we show gratitude, we show selflessness from selfishness, that is when we can experience real and true love in this world. And a person who is also having everything in this world to show for, even after having negative vibes, what do they all attract? They have to face so much of competition, cutthroat competition in this world, just to get something that is so dear to them. You need to slog from morning in the evening just to enjoy a little bit of pleasure for a few days. After that is over, again you need to slog for the entire week just to go back and have a Sunday off. So this is the nature of our world and our life. As the body grows old, we might be in a position where our senses and our mind wants to enjoy, but our body can no longer take it. We might be in a position mentally to see that, yes, I want to enjoy, I want to have a plate full of prasad, but then my body no longer supports. So, sometime back, one brahmachari was just joking in the ashram that when we are in the ages in the ashram, in our initial phases, we don't have relationships with the congregation that much. And we might not get that invitations. But that time, we are more suited to honoring and giving full justice to the prasad that is cooked. As against to maybe we spent a few years in the ashram and we kind of have more relationships, more invitations and more prasad. But that time, what is our situation? Our situation is something, really opposite. We say, non-spicy, no mirchi, no tomato. So, body grows old. The mind says, I want to enjoy, but the body cannot enjoy. Ramanujacharya, one of the acharyas, has given a commentary on this particular shloka and he's called this activity as something like a womb of pain. So this is a really, huge thing to digest. So what is a womb of pain? So this entire thing that we discussed is compared to something like a womb, child is given birth. Mother experiences tremendous pain. And then that happiness of giving birth to the child in this world. So similarly, Ramanujacharya has very nicely kind of given this tag of womb of pain to the happiness or pleasure that we are seeking in this temporary world. Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj again was kind of comparing this to a certain question he asked. I think it was Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. So he said, what do you correctly spell as pleasure as? So how do you spell pleasure? So in the material world, according to our English that we are given, P-L-E-A-S-U-R-E is the correct answer for spelling pleasure. But then what Ravindra Swarup Prabhu gave, kind of a purport to this commentary, he said, pleasure according to the injunctions of Vedic scriptures should be spelt as P-A-I-N, pain. So anything which we kind of seek pleasure, which we need, feel it to be permanent, is nothing but a source of misery and pain in this world. So these are, I'm kind of trying to drive in the point again and again, that happiness is fickle and fleeting, far and few, and we are trying to seek something really, really temporary, that we feel it to be permanent in a temporary place. A self-survey was designed by one of our devotees. So he said, all of us can ask these three questions to ourselves. The first one being, what will you feel like as soon as the happiness that you are enjoying in your life goes away? So the answer is, there are many adjectives which will come to mind. One may be like, I'll feel really miserable, depressed, I'll be stressed out, bereaved, aggrieved, and so on and so forth. So the natural question which follows is, why do you feel so? Why are these emotions exhibited? Why do you feel all these emotions? So the answer to that would be, all these questions, we could ask ourselves. So the answer immediately would be, I didn't want this happiness to end. I was experiencing happiness in maybe watching a particular film or watching India win the match. And I didn't want this to be, I wanted it to be forever. So the conclusion we draw upon by these three questions which are posed is, there we go. We want this happiness to last forever. We are not happy. We get certain kinds of dissatisfaction when something which we are yearning for, seeking for, and we are desiring for is kind of taken away by the nature and force of time and tide. So there is a wonderful story in the 9th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam which illustrates and throws more light upon this particular topic. So this is the story of Maharaj Yayati, and where once upon a time there was a king called as Vrishaparva, and he had a daughter who was called Sharmishta, and there was the priest of the demons was Brihaspati, and his daughter's name was Devayani. So one time Devayani, who was serving as Sarmishta's maid servant, or you could say a lower friend, along with thousands of other friends of Sarmishta, were kind of having pastimes in a particular garden in their palace. And then Lord Shiva and Goddess Parvati happened to pass on Nandi from that particular place. And in shame, all the ladies immediately came outside and covered up all their bodies with clothes. And Devyani also comes out. Sharmishta comes out, and by mistake she takes Devyani's clothes and covers her body. Through this they have a fight between each other. They have arguments to and fro, and words are exchanged. Devyani is hurt. She goes back to her father Shukracharya, and knowing and expecting Shukracharya's wrath, King Vrishaparva, he's coming out of his kingdom and tries to pacify Shukracharya. He tells him, what do you want? What should I do for you that you are pacified? And he asks Devayani, what do I do so that you are pleased? So Devayani takes this opportunity and she tells King Vrishaparva that when I am married and when I go to the place of my king and my husband, I want your daughter Sharmishta along with thousands of her friends to become my maid servants and come with me along to my husband's home. So he immediately agrees for this proposal, knowing and expecting the wrath of Shukracharya to devour his entire kingdom. And if Shukracharya is happy, at least there will be some kind of peace and prosperity in his kingdom. His daughter agrees for it. And as the story progresses, at one particular time they have a fight, and Devayani and the prelude to this is, before this curse and everything happened, before Vrishaparva pacifies Shukracharya, in that particular incident what had happened was Devayani was thrown into a well by Sharmishta, and she walked off with her 1,000 friends. And at that time a king happened to pass by, King Yayati. And this King Yayati was tired and he was looking to quench his thirst. But this well was dry. So his astonishment, there was a voice coming, help me from inside the well. So he comes to this well, sees this beautiful form of this lady lying there. And he offers her upper garments for her to cover herself, picks her outside the well. As soon as she is lifted, the culture that was prevalent, the lady who is Devayani, she tells Yayati Maharaj that please do not have any other man touch my hand or grab my hand in future. Please accept me as your wife. Through which, because he had some attachment, and in Bhagavatam it is written that this was something like a pratiloma marriage, because she was from a Brahmana family and this king was a Kshatriya. So Brahmanas are supposed to be on a higher plane than the Kshatriyas. But then she explains that how, to a background to this particular thing, that how she was cursed by Kachha, and that this is a different story altogether, and that curse is led to her not being able to marry any other brahmana, and that she would be married to only a kshatriya. So then this becomes dharma. So because this becomes dharma, Maharaj Yayati agrees to marry Devyani. And then when they are married off, Shukracharya warns Yayati that he blesses Yayati, but he says, take my daughter away, but make sure as Sharmishtha is going along with my daughter, you never enjoy with her. Do not touch Sharmishtha ever in your life. To which Yayati Maharaj agrees, but then as providence would have, when Devayani was about to conceive, even Sharmishtha was yearning for a progeny. And she approaches Maharaj Yayati and approaches him for procreating a child in her womb. So according to dharma, this is not against the principles of religion, because according to the codes of Kshatriya, like Maharaj Yudhishthir, when Arjuna returned from Arjuna returned from Dwarka, he was completely morose. This is in the first canto of Bhagavatam. And one of the questions that Maharaj Yudhishthir poses to Arjuna to know the cause of his dismay and dismay, he asks, did you refuse the proposal of a chaste lady, or did you not satisfy the demands of somebody who approached you? As a Kshatriya, any woman who approaches a Kshatriya, the duty of a Kshatriya is to satisfy that woman. And then when Maharaj Yayati clarified further with Sharmishtha regarding, when Sharmishtha actually tells Maharaj Yayati that you are a Kshatriya and please give me shelter, please fulfill this desire of me being a mother. So then he agrees for her proposal, marries her dutifully and procreates a progeny. But then when he goes back, Devyani is fuming. Basically she is completely angry, she cannot take this anymore. She goes back to her father, Shukracharya. Shukracharya now, in anger, curses Yayati that you will lose your youth. This exuberance of youth that you have shown and indulged in such sense gratification, I curse you that you lose your youth. But Maharaj Yayati immediately falls at the feet of Shukracharya and says, I have lot of desires to be yet fulfilled, and if those are not fulfilled, I will be miserable. Kindly have pity on me. So Shukracharya remembers that her daughter also needs to be sane and happy. So being a loving father, he gives him an escape route. That is, if he can exchange his old age for somebody else's youth, then Maharaj Yayati can actually regain his youth and enjoy in this world. So then Maharaj Yayati actually had 5 sons. 2 from Devyani and 3 from Sharmishtha. So he approaches his first son, that is Maharaj Yadu. And Maharaj Yadu, he politely refuses this inquiry from his father, but this was according to the principles of religion. Maharaj Yadu says that I want to achieve and perfect my life, and because, my dear father, I am wanting to practice this self-realization, if I exchange my youth with you, then I'll have to spend more years, and at this particular point of time, I have many desires which are still unfulfilled. So if my desires are not unfulfilled, then I cannot practice renunciation. So this is according to the codes of dharma. Bhagavatam explains in this purport that because Maharaj Yadu had a particular reason which was according to the codes of dharma, there was no wrong in refusing his father to not exchanging his youth. But when he approaches the other 3 sons, that was Turvasu, Anu and Dhruvyu, they refuse because they were not well versed in scriptural injunctions and were not learned, because they wanted to indulge in sense gratification. And then the last and the youngest of them is left, that is Puru. Then he goes to his youngest son and says, son, I have this desire of mine, and only if you are willing to exchange your youth with me, then I'll be able to fulfill my desires. And Puru Maharaj immediately accepts without an iota of any doubt in his mind, and he falls flat and says, whatever for you, father, because you are the one who got me in this world. So what hesitation do I need to have to fulfill any hope or any kind of desire for you. I do not want to bring any distress to you. I am readily agreeing to take whatever, be it old age or any misery, I am ready for it. I will exchange my youth with you. So then father and son both exchange their youth and old age. Immediately Puru becomes as old as 100 year old, and Maharaj Yayati again regains youth. And Bhagavatam further explains. Before this, there is a wonderful shloka, which is where his son Puru, he tells Yayati that it goes like, Uttamas chintitet kuryad proktakari tu madhyama ashraddhaya adhamo kuryad akrito charitam pituhu. So the meaning of the shloka is, it says, Uttamas chintitet kuryat. Uttamas chintitet kuryat signifies that son is of the topmost level, who fulfills the desire of his father just by knowing his mind, without even his father having to open his mouth and ask for something. He fulfills that. So a relationship of a guru and disciple also is something on these lines. So Bhagavatam explains very nicely that the second level of a son is something proktakari tu madhyama, something like a father has to open his mouth and tell his son, I want this and this and you should do this. So as soon as he gets the instruction, without any doubt in his mind, the son completely obliges his father and is ready to do anything and everything in this world. And the third level is a son who will get an instruction from his father, but then he's completely disinterested. I've been given this service to do, but actually I'm not interested in doing this service. Anyways, just because I've been given this for the heck of it and for the sake of it, let me just go through with this and complete this. So that type of a son, Bhagavatam describes as Adhama Ashraddhaya Kuryat. So he doesn't have faith in the words of the instructions of his father. And the fourth person, Akrito Charitam Pituhu, that this son, in spite of being instructed and told by his father, he refuses to do the act. He says, I have many different things and busy. I am too busy to do these things. I am not interested in doing this. So Bhagavatam describes this fourth class of a son to be like father's stool, completely abominable. So these are the four types of sons, or we can say, if as practicing sadhakas, as disciples, and as we have guru and we have a disciple, our relationship with guru, this is something which will hold us in good stead to engage in devotional service. So Bhagavatam has different kinds of lessons at different stages, and the words and pages of Srimad Bhagavatam are nectarian and instructive to one and all. When we go through such stories, and when we further move to this story, we find that Maharaj Yayati now enjoys sense gratification for a period of more than 1,000 years, now that he has regained his youth. And ultimately, after enjoying for 1,000 years, finally he's disgusted. He's not finding happiness even at that particular time. And then what he does? But Maharaj Yayati is a great devotee of the Lord, and now he decides, I need to perfect my life. So at this time, he narrates a very allegorical story to his wife, and also she is also taken into the line of renunciation. She also goes into the path of self-realization. So we see from contemporary examples, we see from scriptures, we see from Bhagavatam, how happiness is not something which is very easily perceivable and achievable in this world. From the example of Maharaj Yayati, we can see that even after enjoying for thousands of years, he couldn't actually satisfy himself fully. But to his credit, he actually realized just by himself that what is actually that substance which will give him perfection and happiness. And he started seeking, perfected his life and achieved liberation. So now I would like to just dwell on the subject of Ramayana, to just take a track off from here and we'll enter the subject of Ramayana. But we'll continue the same topic and the lesson remains the same. So we analyze the subject of Vibhishan Sharanagati. So in this episode, this story that I'm going to narrate is from Kamba Ramayana. So all the lessons and the activities that take place may not be from Valmiki Ramayana, but they are from Kamba Ramayana, who was a poet and a South Indian Acharya, who is kind of very poetically composed Ramayana, which is appreciated by one and all. So we see that when Rama and the forces of the monkeys were at Dhanushkodi, at the tip of South India, Vibhishan along with four other people started flying from the palace of Lanka towards Dhanushkodi, towards where Ram was situated. So as soon as the monkeys could find the first glimpse, they immediately alerted Sugriv, and Sugriv immediately found out this was Vibhishan along with his four ministers. He was coming towards this direction. So then Sugriv, he sees Vibhishan from a far distance and he says, "Look at Vibhishan. How is he coming? He is having a club, a mace in his hand as a weapon. So what is the thing for which actually Vibhishan is coming towards Ram?" But then he also says, "Again see, he is so expert that he has his hands folded. But along with his posture of folding hands, those same hands are again holding a club. But that is the biggest weapon, more than the weapon of club which Vibhishan is carrying. The most, terrific weapon for us to fear is his folded hands with which he is coming to Lord Ram. Why? Because Lord Ram is such a person, anyone who comes to him with folded hands, he will just accept him and give him Sharanagati." So Sugriv says that we should be careful of the intentions of why Vibhishan is coming towards Lord Ram. And he goes to Lord Ram. Before he comes to Lord Ram, the Vibhishan and the four people come to Dhanushkodi. And a minister, an assistant of Vibhishan, comes towards Sugriv and others. And his name is Mahinda. So there is one Mahinda who is a minister of Sugriv. And there is one Mahinda on the other side who is Vibhishan's assistant. So he comes here and he says that, "Oh my dear King Sugriv, Vibhishan has come all the way from Lanka to Dhanushkodi to seek the shelter of Lord Ram because he tried to stop Ravan from committing atrocities to Mother Sita, and he was trying to drive sense into that brain of Ravan that return Sita to Ram and perfect your life. But to no avail, he couldn't drive sense into Ravan. And that is why when Dharma was not prevailing, Vibhishan and us decided to come and join the forces of Dharma and take shelter under the feet of Lord Ram. So kindly help us, direct us towards Lord Ram. Please take this message to Lord Ram." So then Sugriv, as you know, we might always say in the material world, for a contemporary example, if someone approaches, I am reminded of one example as if we wanted to go to Rishikesh for a yatra and we wanted to book rooms, and the very first instance when someone comes and approaches you, "Are a room hai kya milega kya kitna milega, we want more rooms, we want 100 rooms, we'll fill your hotels." But then what happens on the other side, the person is sitting and he says, "Nahi nahi, kuch bhi room nahi hai, sab khali nahi hai, everything is full." So Sugriv kind of responded in something like this. Sugriv, to this request from the Vibhishan side, he kind of responded as in, "Ram is very busy now, I can't do anything, you come at a later date." So Vibhishan now responds to this. Vibhishan says to Sugriv, "My dear Sugriv, I am a demon by nature. I mean demons are supposed to be very poisonous by nature. I don't know, right now my mind and senses have agreed to seek shelter from Lord Ram. And at this particular time, I am ready to wait for as long as Lord Ram wants to take to give me shelter. But at this time, if I am not able to get an opportunity to seek shelter from Lord Ram, I don't have control over my mind and my senses. Tomorrow, what my position will be? Because I am a demon, tomorrow my senses might deviate. Today I am having this thought of seeking Sharanagati from Lord Ram. Tomorrow I may not have control over my mind. So my dear king, please give me audience with Lord Ram and at least pass this message to Lord Ram. So this is the crux of the matter. But as we have touched this subject, I would like to just complete this pastime, which is very nectarine. So we'll go ahead with this pastime and finish this pastime. So Sugriv, hearing this, is a little perplexed. And now he didn't have any reason as to why he should not go to Lord Ram. So Sugriv wonders, and Kambar writes in his commentary, that Sugriv wonders whether he should ask Vibhishan to take bath in the Ganga to purify himself, or he should take bath in the waters of the ocean which was just nearby, so that he purifies before he takes him to Lord Ram. And then he goes to Lord Ram, and Lord Ram is the Paramatma within everyone's heart. He can read our mind and he can read our heart. So Lord Ram tells Sugriv, okay, my dear Sugriv, do not feel that he has to purify himself or clean himself by dipping in the Ganga or the ocean. Because a person, what to speak of having any flaws in character or in, I mean, having sin, I mean, sins with him. I will give shelter to anyone and everyone who approaches me. Even he is the most sinful person in this world. But anyone who comes to me and surrenders and seeks shelter from me, I will not refuse. So, when Sugriv hears this, he is a little bit taken aback. I mean, his kind of sense is driven into Sugriv's mind. Lord Ram being... and then Sugriv kind of passes on the entire message, what the purpose of Vibhishan and the others was to actually come to Dhanushkodi to meet and to seek shelter from Lord Ram. And hearing this, Lord Ram, an expert leader, he could have taken the decision then and themselves by himself. He didn't need to wait for anyone else to take the decision. But the leader and the quality that he needs to teach, and he's kind of wanting to teach all of us, is that he had his assembly of all his wise men there. People who were responsible at a seniorly leadership position in his entourage. So there was Sugriv, Jamvan, Hanuman, Angad, and you know all the other senior warriors who had leadership roles. So now that Lord Ram came to know the mind of Vibhishan through Mahinda's inquiry, he asks everyone, so everyone kindly say your opinions and share your opinion about should we accord Sharanagati to Vibhishan. What are all your takes on this? So the first one to speak about this is Sugriv. So Sugriv, he says, I have three reasons why you should not, we should be very careful, my dear Lord, in according Sharanagati to Vibhishan. So Sugriv says, the first reason is, Vibhishan has given up the association of his brother Ravan. So a person who can give up his brother, how can we trust him? That tomorrow, isne aaj bhai ko chhod diya, hum kaun hai? Hum to uske koi rishte mein lagte hi nahi hai. So this is the first reason that Sugriv gives Ram, that we should not give, we should be careful in giving shelter to Vibhishan. Then another reason, he says he is a demon by nature. So as Vibhishan is a demon by nature, that nature will come out at some point of time in his life. So we should actually kill Vibhishan. Sugriv goes to make this statement that we should actually kill Vibhishan, forget giving shelter to him. And the third reason is, he says that we have assembled here on this Dhanushkodi, this place. My dear Lord, we have come here, why? To fight the demons, to annihilate, completely destroy them and bring back Mother Sita. And then when the world tomorrow hears that we have taken the help of this demon, Vibhishan, that Lord Ram had to take the help of one Rakshas Vibhishan to defeat Ravan. So then that will bring infamy to you, my dear Lord. Please do not give shelter to him at any cost. So these were three reasons that Sugriv poses to Ram to not give shelter. And he says that you cannot trust Vibhishan. So next Jamvan stands up. And Jamvan says that, yes, I agree with Sugriv to a certain extent. And Jamvan says that intelligent people are those who never befriend their enemies at any cost. So this is the first reason Jamvan gives. Another reason he gives that Ravan was in a way backstabbed by Vibhishan, because this is the time when Ravan needs support and help the most. You say when the going gets tough, the tough get going. But now Vibhishan actually has got going towards, not he's fighting from Ravan's side, but he's coming towards Ram's side. So when he can backstab his own brother, what to speak of you and me? I mean, Lord Ram, how do we trust this particular? He can. And the third reason that Jamvan gives is he says that this might be a ploy of Vibhishan to join the force of Lord Ram. In disguise, he might just win all our hearts. And he might be one amongst us. And he might be a very potent force in our army. And at the time of the need of the hour, he might completely backstab us. And again, show his true colors of him being a demon. And joining forces. This might all be a ploy of him trying to cheat Lord Ram by coming and seeking shelter. So my dear Lord, we need to be very careful in according shelter to Vibhishan. Now, all through this time, one by one, different people started expressing, all the leaders expressed their opinions. But one particular interesting thing to note was, it was not that only Sugriv wanted Vibhishan to be killed. That mood was exhibited by all the monkeys. But all the other monkeys and the leaders never had the guts to mention that word, kill Vibhishan. Don't give shelter, kill Vibhishan. When they saw that as soon as Sugriv was the first one to open his mouth, when he said, you should kill Vibhishan, Ram's face became hot like molten iron and like a burning sun. He couldn't tolerate the reasons or this act of Sugriv. So immediately everyone got the message that this is something which is not palatable. So although everyone gave their frank opinions, they very much were careful to kind of follow that we should not repeat this mistake that Sugriv has committed. Finally, Ram says, Hanuman, you speak. I want to hear your opinion now. So Hanumanji, he's an expert speaker. So he says, in the earnest assembly, so many intelligent people have spoken already. Nothing much is left for me to speak. But since you have requested my Lord, I'll make a humble attempt and in the service of, for your service, I'll speak what I feel needs to be done. Or, I mean, my suggestions. So now Hanuman starts. So Hanuman starts with the first thing that Sugriv says in reply to, I mean, he counters one thing that Sugriv, Jamvan and all the other monkeys had said. So Sugriv had pointed out the flaw of trust, whether we can trust Vibhishan. So Hanuman says, my dear Lord Ram, a person who might have conceit in his heart, when he comes, such a person, when he comes in front of a personality who's actually completely pure, clean in his heart and character, that burning effulgence of sun will burn away that kind of conceit of some deflections of conceit in his heart. That will be completely washed away or burnt away. So what to speak of causing harm? Because, my dear Lord, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead and you are that eternal character who exemplifies not only purity but complete clean character. So anyone who has a little iota of conceit in his heart has no chance to stand in front of you. Forget cheating. So then he further says that when I was in Lanka as a doot, you had sent me, I was in the assembly, I was captured by the soldiers of Ravan. At that particular time, what had happened was, it was Vibhishan who actually opened his mouth, and because he opened his mouth, I was saved. Because Vibhishan had the courage, and this Vibhishan, who actually had the courage to speak Niti Shastra and etiquette to the most fearful Ravan, so what kind of trust are we talking? I mean, why can't we have faith in... I see no reason why we should not have faith in the purpose and the inclination with Vibhishan has come to seek shelter from you. Going forward, Hanuman says that he has not come for seeking any kingdom to seek your shelter so that you defeat someone else, dethrone him and establish him as the king of that particular place. He doesn't have such an intention also. So he has not come with any agenda like this also, my dear Lord. So there is no reason I see why he's come here to cheat us also. And because he has, Hanuman also says that Brahma cannot defeat Vibhishan, Ravan. Shiva cannot defeat Vibhishan and Ravan. So if you do not accord shelter to Vibhishan, it might bring infamy to you, my dear Lord. It might seem that you are afraid of giving shelter like Brahma and Shiva also. And finally, Hanuman says that it's a sign of fortune that somebody like Vibhishan from the opposite side has come and you give him shelter. That is the most sign of fortune. So after this, Lord Ram now starts speaking. So Lord Ram finally now concludes this episode and pastime of Vibhishan Sharanagati. He says to Hanuman first, he says that, my dear Hanuman, I agree with whatever you have said. Definitely we should accord shelter to Vibhishan. I am in toto with, but one thing that you said, I am not in conjunction with you. So Sugriv wonders that actually Hanuman is speech personified. Whatever Hanuman does, he is perfect in Samveda and he has perfected the art of speaking everything. So he can do no wrong in speaking. He is the master of public speaking. Very sensitive to dealings also. So how can Lord Ram find fault in Hanuman's speech also? So everyone is curious to know what Lord Ram is kind of seeking here. So Lord Ram says that, as pointed out earlier also, you mentioned that he might, the perplexity between conceit and character. So Lord Ram said, I have no purpose, even if his character is completely shaded, or if he has conceit or sinful reactions, or if he has ill intentions for me, I do not care. He has come to seek shelter from me. Unconditionally, I am ready to give shelter. This is what I signify. So Lord Ram clearly delineates this principle here. Then he actually narrates two stories to delineate, which we will not touch now. And there are wonderful lessons to derive from it. Further, he says that I have been incognito. I have been in Vanvas for 14 years. I have to be for 14 years. And if I do not give shelter to Vibhishan, what will I tell Vasishta, who is my kul guru, when I go back to Ayodhya? And on hearing that I have not given shelter to Vibhishan because Sugriv told me don't give him shelter, he will again send me 14 years for Vanvas. So I want to give shelter to Vibhishan. So I need to give shelter to Vibhishan. Then he narrates a story of two birds. So Lord Ram says two birds were sitting on a tree. One bird was a male bird and the other was a female. So a hunter comes by. A hunter shoots an arrow, kills the female bird, grabs the hunt and goes for the day. The next day the hunter comes and he's completely satiated, tired, doesn't find any prey. And by providence, because it's raining heavily, so he seeks shelter underneath the same tree. He doesn't know it's the same tree and the male bird is still sitting on that same tree. And hours go by, the rain subsides and there is chilling winter everywhere. So he burns fire to give himself warmth. And as hours pass by, he's feeling hungry. So this male bird sees what is happening. And then this male bird, out of compassion, it jumps into the fire, dies and becomes a food for this hunter for that particular day. So Lord Ram tells Sugriv, hey Sugriv, this story of the two birds is something like my story. The female bird signifies Sita, the male bird signifies myself, and the hunter is none other than Ravan. So the difference between the bird story and my story is, Ravan has not killed Sita and neither has he come to seek shelter from me. But who has come to seek shelter? It is just Vibhishan who has come to seek shelter. And now when that bird, it can give shelter, even when the hunter didn't ask shelter from that bird, still that bird was magnanimous to offer itself in charity, its entire life, sacrifice its life in charity for satisfying that hunter who didn't come to seek shelter, what to speak of me? How can I not give shelter to Vibhishan? So, these are some points which are very nectarian, I mean from the Kamba Ramayana, which I found, I thought I should share with all of you all. So, an interesting point to note is, Ram also makes the point that he tells Sugriv that it is not for, Ram tells that it is not for the kingdom that he has come, but it is for shelter that Vibhishan has come. And Hanuman also makes this point. So both Hanuman and Ram at different points, they make the same statement to Sugriv. And Acharyas have given a very wonderful reason for this. They say that why Hanuman made this statement that Vibhishan has come not for seeking any kingdom but just shelter from Lord Ram. Because he wanted to reciprocate with Vibhishan because Vibhishan had saved his life in Lanka. So as a reciprocation, Hanuman said this to Ram. And what was the reason why Lord Ram said this? So for that, Acharyas have explained that the first thing was he wanted to pacify Sugriv. And the second thing was he wanted to make sure that if something like this comes up in Sugriv's heart, Ram told Sugriv that you also came to me with the same desire that you wanted Vali to be killed and coronated as the king of Kishkindha. Because of that, I killed Vali and I gave you shelter. When you came to me with the desire of getting shelter, seeking for kingdom, now at least Vibhishan has not come even with that desire to have a kingdom. At least now when he doesn't have the desire to seek a kingdom, but whether you had a desire, what is the difficulty in me giving Sharanagati to Vibhishan? So, this is after all these things, it was decided that Vibhishan would be given Sharanagati. Then Ram says, go and call Vibhishan. He's called. Vibhishan is crowned the, not only is he given shelter by Lord Ram, but he's actually made the king of Lanka even before Ravan is defeated. So this is the glory of Lord Ram. Vibhishan says, my dear Lord, just by placing this crown on my head, I do not accept myself to be the king of Lanka. Please place your lotus feet on my head. So Lord Ram obliges, he places his lotus feet on the head of Vibhishan, and then he actually accepts himself to be the king of Lanka in the true spirit. The message to be derived from this particular pastime in one particular instance is the place where we mentioned about Vibhishan, mentioning about not being able to control his senses and not having control over his senses. Whereas when we compare it to the episode of, you say, when Sugriv was reminded by Lakshman, Ram sent Lakshman to remind Sugriv that 4 months have passed by, it's been 4 months, you've been enjoying your senses, it's high time you live up to your promise. So here what the connection is, here is a person, Sugriv had been accorded the shelter of Lord Ram. So Sugriv was somebody who had actually got and living in the shelter of Lord Ram, but still he fell prey to the victim of the senses. And here was Vibhishan, who was not having the shelter. He was seeking shelter of Lord Ram, but he was so careful and alert that he might fall down and, fall prey to the victim of his mind and senses. So as Sadhaka's lessons for us to learn is, even when we are most fortunate, we are in a most fortunate position of having the association of wonderful devotees, having all the facilities, so many festivals, so many things which happen without even us needing to do something in that, we need to be careful and alert to the moment that we might any time fall prey victim to this senses that may lead to our fall down. So Ramayana very beautifully, this instance of Vibhishan Sharanagati, very beautifully delineates this. And the lesson or the thing that we can draw out from this entire pastime is something like, we as sadhakas are struggling to find happiness in this material world. That's the sum and substance of our entire discussion today. So when we need to re-divert and channelize our attention to seek real happiness, real love in this world, how is that possible? When we actually focus and do the things that are very simple, Prabhupada has mentioned that it's very easy to perfect our life, and sometimes the process is so simple that we might actually miss it. What we have to do to rectify this? Again, at every given instance, we have heard so many speakers and we have heard countless lectures of Maharaj where the reasons for all problems end up in, do your activities, like get up early in the morning, do your prescribed number of rounds, practice spirituality properly, do good, be good, and live a pious life, and take shelter, do not criticize devotees. So these are some cliched answers that are seemingly so easy and simple to follow that just chant Hare Krishna, your life will be sublime. This is the kind of answer we have, Shastras give, our scriptures perceive this answer for the essence of all problems that is kind of accrued. So the answer is so simple that sometimes we actually miss the point. Ye to theek hai, chanting to karenge, lekin ye problem ka abhi kya karu, wo batao. So that is the thing that we need to realize, hitting this again and again, that real happiness is to be sought by actually finding shelter in surrendering to the process, surrendering to a person, surrendering to a Supreme Lord, just as the pastime of Vibhishan Sharanagati. And also Kadam Karan Maharaj has mentioned in this regard that we need to practice the process of bhakti to actually find a solution to this problem. And as Bhagavad Gita explains, that there are four processes, karma, dhyana, stanga and bhakti. And then there are reasons why bhakti is the topmost. Bhagavad Gita explains. And then why we should practice bhakti yoga to perfect our life. So there are two aspects to it, the nitya and the naimittika. So this is explained by Kadam Karan Maharaj, who says that nitya is activities which we perform daily in our life. Something like, you know, we get up early, we chant, we do Mangalarti, we do Guru Puja, or we hear to Srimad Bhagavatam class, or we engage in devotional services day in, day out. The net result is what? At certain point of time, however attentive we are, however focused we are, the chance of us being monotony creeping in our system is very high. It is inevitable. So that is why there is something called as the naimittika aspect, which is a part of a naimittika sadhana. Bhakti is again something like the festivals. So something like a festivals and occasions, like we have so many festivals lined up now. We had Nityananda Trayodashi, Gaur Purnima and Holi, and so many festivals lined up. So what are these festivals? These festivals give us a chance to fill us up with Krishna consciousness, and they give us an ample dose of spirituality such that they break open the regular monotony that has crept in our system, where we practice and struggle to practice the nitya aspects of actually coming to temple, associating with devotees, chanting attentively. So all these after a little time becomes very much monotony for us. So to break that apart, and to this will be a cycle. Have festivals, gain more joy, do your nitya aspect properly, again to continue nitya aspect, have festivals, again gain the courage and gain the power to practice sadhana bhakti. So festivals are not only a time to celebrate, but we need to contemplate also. So we should contemplate why we are celebrating festivals like Janmashtami. It is something like, not only because it's the appearance of Lord Krishna, but it exemplifies the sacrifice of Vasudeva and Devaki. So we celebrate the festival of Dasara. So Dasara exemplifies that. Why is Dasara celebrated? Not only signifies the dominion of Ram over Ravan, but is also the sacrifice of Ram, Lakshman, Sita, Bharat. We celebrate the festival of Diwali. Diwali is celebrated not only because it's a festival of lights, but it's a celebration of the sacrifice of Vibhishan. And we have our Brahmotsav. So our Brahmotsav that our Radha Gopinath temple celebrates, it's not just a celebration that we celebrate to kind of mark the occasion of the day on which Radha Gopinath were installed, but it's actually a day when to contemplate upon the sacrifice made by a number of devotees, because of which you and me are sitting in this temple hall today, right now. So festivals are an opportunity to celebrate and contemplate, and taking advantage of these festivals, we get a dose of spirituality through which we practice our daily sadhana bhakti, and then through which this cycle eternally we need to continue focus and practice and perfect our lives. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Thank you very much, Prabhuji, for the fantastic class. Hare Krishna. So we would like to welcome all those guests and devotees who have come for the first time to our Sunday Fish program today. So hum un sabhi bhakton ka aur atithiyon ka swagat karna chahenge jo aaj hamare mandir mein sabse pehli baar padhare hai. Our reception team standing near Hanuman Ji's vigraha there would welcome you to Shri Radha Gopinath Mandir.